Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 137 of Constructive Criticism. I'm your host, Jessica, every week, and I'm joined by my co-hosts, Casey.
Hey, what's up?
Couldn't think of a funny thing to say.
I mean, as par for the course.
No, I'm... Ow. That was rude.
Kind of the heart of the matter.
That was... I mean, you know, if you're not going to say something witty, Casey's got to have something.
I mean, that was rude. That was rude. Michael, what's up?
Not a lot. Just literally got back like 2 minutes ago from Grand Prix LA.
Welcome back.
Thank you.
I wish you weren't here. I'm just kidding.
I understand.
No, it's good to see you, man. I'm sorry that I made you record like literally after you got off the car.
Got off the car, yeah.
I was going to say off the bus, but I'm like, he didn't take a bus.
I mean, I feel like I just got off the car. My vision is still swimming a little bit, but...
How much did you drive?
I didn't drive that much. I mean, but it was like a 10-hour drive, so...
You guys were speeding a lot.
I mean, I just have like some motion sickness or something.
All right.
But my mouth is still working, so here we are.
You know what won't give you motion sickness, and that's shopping at Oasis Games. You can check them out at oasisgamessllc.com, mtgoasis.com, and oasisccg.com. You can get 15% off of your first order by using the code CCMTG at checkout, and you can get 5% off of every order by using that code. Man, this is the latest we've done this podcast. I'm worried. We're going to start off strong, and then...
And then you're going to fall asleep, and I'm going to have to do it?
I hope not.
I mean, it's already dark out. It's like way past your bedtime.
Dude, it's 2 hours past my bedtime.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
For reference, that's...
It's 10:30 p.m.
So I have been going to bed later because it's been light outside at 8 p.m. But, you know,
sure,
I'm an
sure.
old man.
Sure,
so
sure, sure.
Yeah.
You get the Denny's specials. Like
Exactly.
Sounds great. That Let's go record in the Denny's.
The early bird special dinners. Don't forget you can support this podcast directly by going to patreon.com/ccmtg. It means the world to us. Like, I didn't give the guys enough credit last week who are the new patrons, and every time it happens, it like makes my day. So thank you so much to everybody for your support. I tried streaming today. It did not work out. I need a new computer. We're going to make it a goal so that, like, I'm not sure if we want to buy a laptop so that everybody can stream from it or whatever, but we definitely want to start streaming, and so it will be a Patreon goal. When we hit it, we will start streaming again. It used to be $100 a month. That was when we had a computer that could stream from. We don't have that anymore. So, if that's something you want to see, donate to the Patreon at patreon.com/ccmtg. All right, so hashtag always improving. We're going to start with you this week, Casey. How did you improve at Magic this week, and what is hashtag always improving all about?
Well, I'll answer those questions in reverse order so they make
sense. Sounds great.
Yeah. So hashtag always improving is just it's the pursuit of greatness, trying to get better at Magic every single week and every single day, every single match, every single game that you play, getting better at Magic, because if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. And... the way that I have gotten better at Magic is by going back to basics and like stretching my brewing muscles, which is not something I've really done recently. Trying to find holes, find ways to approach the metagame and standard that aren't being explored, the weaknesses that the top decks have, things like that. And really, it makes you assess like what the strengths and weaknesses of decks are, which even if you end up like not playing any of the decks that you brew, it makes you think about Magic in a different way, which has really helped me. And, you know, even if I don't end up playing any of the decks that, you know, filled my waste paper basket this week, it doesn't mean that it was wasted time because I was learning from it.
Sure. I mean, that makes a lot of sense. We often talk about, like, playing the villain deck, and I think it's a similar approach, right? Like, you just want to know what makes that deck tick.
Exactly. Something that I used to really like doing, and then... You know, we don't test as much, or at least I'm not as involved in team testing as I used to be.
I don't think any of us other, like, the new guys on the team, they all test a ton.
Good for them.
But, like, you and me, like, and Manny, like, we don't get the testing we used to get. I mean, I don't know that Manny ever got the testing that we got, but...
Yeah. I mostly test with Matt Kling late at night, because he's the only one that, like, keeps the hours that I do.
I've asked for the Monday invite at least like 7 times, and every Monday he texts me, "Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot you stayed up late on Mondays."
Oh, well, including me in that conversation probably helped, because I remember things and Matt doesn't.
That's good information. At literally any point in time, I will probably.
Yeah, and Michael Hinderacher tests, you know, until 3 a.m. every night. So,
yeah.
I mean, you're limiting yourself with this Matt Kling approach.
That's true. I've actually tested with Michael very late at night a couple of times.
There you go.
When I was very surprised to find him awake.
I don't sleep well, so sometimes you just feel like you're better off doing something that you want to be doing.
I barely
than, like,
sleep at all, so we should be playing a lot more Magic together.
Yeah. Trying to force yourself to sleep just isn't all that fun.
Yeah.
So Michael, how have you improved at Magic this week?
I improved at Magic this week by playing my first GP and by trusting Matt on deck
Did
choice.
Did you trust him? Because he didn't even play the same deck.
I don't care. I trust Matt more than he trusts himself, I think. It was great. It was also the only deck that I really could expect myself to play at any sort of reasonable level of proficiency, so I felt like changing at the last second was just going to be a terrible choice.
So what GP did you play in?
What round did you pick up your first loss at the GP you played in?
Round 4. I lost to Jund because I drew something approaching 50 lands over 3 games without seeing an amulet. So I did actually manage to force a game 3 despite never finding an amulet, never drawing a Hornet Queen or a Summoner's Pact.
I was just
or
wondering how long I was
Trinket
the...
Mage.
Yeah.
No Trinket Mages in the deck at this point.
I was just wondering how long I was the only blemish on your Modern record, because I think you played your first sanctioned match of Modern against me, and I won, and then you didn't lose a match of Modern until fourth round of your second Modern tournament.
That is true. I mean, sort of. I scooped the finals of the first.
Yeah, that doesn't
played,
count.
You would have crushed that guy.
All right. I appreciate
We're counting
that
as a win.
All right. Roll with it. And then after that, I got all the way to 9-1 before losing a pretty tight, maybe 10-1, I'm not sure, before losing a pretty tight match.
You picked up your second loss. You were 8-1 the last time that I looked.
I won my first round of day 2. Against Burn, and then lost to Abzan Company.
And then the second time that I looked was, I think in round 12, you had 33 points?
In round 12,
So you were 11-1?
No, I didn't get to 11-1. I don't think so. Maybe I did, man. Maybe this went worse for me at the end than I remember.
I'm pretty sure that you had, maybe it was round 13, but you had 33 points when I looked.
It was probably 13. I'm
11
sure
and 2 sounds
and
more
two.
Reasonable, because yeah. 11 and 1, like, 11 you're almost 1, in, like, triple draw range,
I
would, right?
Well, no, I'd
if you can find the right people.
I'd have probably had a feature match if I was 11 and 1.
Okay.
I mean, presumably.
Yeah, that sounds right.
But you played in your first GP. How'd you do?
Well, I think I ended up in about 40th place, so, I mean, I was happy to cash, but I was close to... You know, top 6. My breakers probably weren't good enough to top 8 of decks, too.
Sounds like a pretty good first GP experience. Like, you played a deck that you love. You played Amulet Bloom again, or Amulet Titan. We'll call it Amulet Titan.
Yes, I believe I was the only one to day 2 with a deck playing Amulet of Vigor.
I think you were the only one at the GP playing Amulet of Vigor.
Alex actually played against someone playing a Retreat to Coral Helm Sakura Tribe Scout Amulet deck that seemed...
Did Alex not have a buy?
Alex had 2 buys. He played in like
including
round 6.
This deck, or
yeah, I don't believe so. I mean, maybe not officially. That was more of a tiebreaker tanker.
Yeah.
So
that was stone cold of me.
Yeah. So
but
get
also,
him.
Come
get
on,
him.
Guy.
Get him. But pretty come good. On. Pretty good event. Pretty fun. How was LA? I've never been to LA. Time. I want to go really bad.
It was good. Alex was in charge of the food we were eating, and I feel like I'm about 18 pounds heavier, so you know, I don't
that's
know how that's
good.
Possible in 3
skinny.
Days, but yeah, I'm bulking up.
So for me, I improved at Magic this week by doing a lot of different things. So for me, it's keeping calm. I really try not to get upset at my computer on MTGO. I've been playing a lot of MTGO lately, and it's really helped. I played a game against Green White Tokens in paper, and the player that I knew, and I drew a lot of lands, and he attacked into a Worldbreaker with his Avacyn just and gave me a free kill on his Avacyn, and I still lost. Like,
that's tough. Also, why does Worldbreaker have reach? I feel like I'm upset about 2 parts of this story.
It's because he's
like,
tall.
This is the trample thing with Primeval Titan. It's like, why does he have that? But like, because
he needs it.
Because he does. Yeah, because that's like important. That's what makes him Worldbreaker.
Yeah, obviously.
And
I mean, how are you going to break worlds if you can't even reach
like,
the birds?
I can tell that story and not be mad. I'm not mad. I hope I don't sound salty because I'm not. It's like whatever. But it's a fun thing that happened to me. And I don't think I would have felt that way 2 months ago. I feel like I'm getting back to where I was a year ago where things didn't bother me as much. And instead of my losing to an opponent that attacked their Avacyn into my Worldbreaker, I can laugh about it rather than be upset about it. And that's pretty big. I think that's what made me good at Magic a year ago. Because I was playing about half the Magic I was playing then. Or sure. Playing now, then. Yeah.
Yeah.
That made sense on audio. I hope people know what I said there.
I feel like the hand gestures
didn't help
it for me.
Yeah. You got it because you could see my hands. But I think what's important here is like Salt and Bad Beat Stories. They're pretty great. I had some really bad beat stories from Vegas. I played a lot of poker this weekend instead of Magic. Lost to Full House tens over aces twice in one sitting, where both of them was the ace on the river. And that was tilting.
Yeah, that is tilting.
There's like lessons to learn from. Like, in the first hand, I definitely should have folded when the ace hit. I should have known that. Like, he had a 10. Like, that's just what he had. And it's fun. It's fun to like get to like take my Magic skills, apply them to poker, and like play a lot of games. I only lost $30 playing poker, and I played for like, oh man, it must have been like 20 hours.
Negative 30 isn't too bad over that span.
No, and like the drinks that you get during that time span.
Exactly. It's about getting the money back for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. And no, it was net positive if like.
Yeah. If you value a drink at 50 cents.
Yep. Right? Oh, then I was way above.
Nice.
No, just kidding.
But ultimately, right, it's about you have to have fun playing. You have to enjoy the process. And sometimes that means sometimes you're the hammer, sometimes you're the nail. And sometimes you're the nail for a really weird looking hammer, but. You know, it happens. That's magic.
I think that could serve as a metaphor for a lot of things.
I think that it was really fun, though. I got to play some Magic this week. I got to watch the GP from my hotel room for a few hours. The Channel Fireball stream kept crashing, so eventually I was like, all right, like, I'm going to go back downstairs and play some poker.
Yeah, I actually tried to watch the stream a couple times as well. I was kind of busy over the weekend, but I tried to catch the stream because, like, Michael was X and 1 for a long time. But they kept giving feature matches to chumps instead.
Well, I mean, I understand. They didn't want to take away any of the, you know, they didn't want to make any of the casters look bad next to me. That's
exactly. Yeah. Well, I think that they just didn't want to show Amulet of Vigor on stream.
No, actually, what happened was if I'd gotten paired up against like a Platinum Pro, I think that probably would have done it when I was in like the top 15 tables.
Wait,
or so.
Did you not fill out your deck list as Magic Mike Hinderocker?
No, I forgot. Damn it!
I feel like if you'd done that. You probably would have gotten at least one.
But overall, like, as far as, like, applying skills and Magic to other things, you know, taking a step back and, like, looking at matches. I even today on stream, I mulliganed to 5 and was like, eh, whatever. And I feel like I haven't had that attitude in a long time. And it feels really good to just, like, accept. Like, I kind of have lied to myself. It kind of started at the Pro Tour when I had something like 13 mulligans at the Pro Tour and was like, oh man, like I am the most unlucky. But it was a steady decline, and we actually had listeners talk about it, like, Spencer, don't get caught up in like the unluckiness, but I did, and I feel like I'm getting over that, and that feels good. So
that is good.
Yeah. Let's give out some cards. So we try as often as we can to give out some cards on the podcast. So this week on the podcast, I want to give it a playset of Spreading Seas. So last week on the podcast, the best two decks in Modern were Jund and Red Green Tron. Spreading Seas is probably pretty good going into the next week, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like if there's ever been a time to play Merfolk, it's when everybody says to play Tron, right?
And Jund too, right? Like that deck's
that's
real
a surprisingly
good, against,
good matchup.
That deck's who? Real for good Merfolk. Against for Merfolk. It's okay. Real good. And we saw that this week at GPLA that Merfolk won, and it definitely had 4 Spreading Seas in it. So we're going to be able to play a set of Spreading Seas to our patron, Eric Land. I can't remember if it's Landez or Land, or it's got to be Landez.
Landez.
It's going to be Eric Landez.
From this point forward.
Also, I'm pretty sure we owe Eric some playmats. So yeah, Eric, if you want to shoot me a message, we follow each other on Twitter, so just shoot me a message on Twitter with your address. I'll get all the guys, including Quentin and Matt, to sign your playmat, and we'll ship you one for both you and your son, as well as these Spreading Seas. Thank you so much for being a Patreon. patron of the show. We really appreciate it. You know, starting at $3 or more, you can too be eligible for this wonderful prize of Spreading Seas or whatever it is, the card of the week. But Spreading Seas, like, that was a good call.
Yeah, Spreading Seas is great, and Eric is great, and it all seems good.
Eric, I mean, is great, I agree.
What are your thoughts, having only played a deck that can never beat a Spreading Seas in Modern?
Actually, Spreading Seas is pretty atrocious because you play like 25 bounce lands. I mean, it just falls off. But.
Well, but like, I don't know, I've never actually seen an Amulet player, even when Amulet was good, beat a Spreading Seas, because it's always like Summoner's Pact and have exactly two green, and then you get Spreading Seas.
I also have seen that.
Interesting. Or, well, I didn't die
Slaughter
to Spreading
Pack,
Seas.
Spreading Seas, damn it.
I was good at not casting Pact. Yeah, I only played against one deck with Spreading Seas, and it was Esper with like Snapcasters and Tassigers and four main deck Spreading Seas, so I wasn't really quite sure what
was going on. Sounds like a man after my own heart.
That sounds rough.
Yeah, I played against him at 7-1, so it was clearly working out pretty well for him. Although not that well, because, you know.
Because you crushed him real easy with Primal Titans. Sure. Yeah, I know the trick.
So, Eric, first of all, we appreciate you. And second of all, Spreading Seas rocks. And hopefully these are something you don't have and you can add to your collection and get started on a Modern deck. Let's talk about Power Rankings. Every week on this podcast, we talk about the decks that are doing well in specific formats. Last week, we did Modern, so it's Standard week. But you know what? There was no Standard tournaments, but there were two Modern GPs. And we can now look at how the Modern metagame shifted. But there are a lot of decks to talk about, because coming in at number 5, we have 3 different decks all with 7 points.
Sick. Love it.
I'm just gonna talk about all these decks really quick. We're in Abzan Company, Infect, and Bant and Eldrazi. They all come in with 7 points. So the things to note here are Abzan Company did not make the list last week. In fact, it had 0 finishes in day 2 of the SCG Open last week. But it comes in here showing that it's still got some chops. Infect drops a little bit, right? It was at number 4 last week.
I believe it was a little bit higher last week.
Yeah. Last week, I believe it was at number 4.
Well, I mean, I think that both of those...
Actually, it was at number 3 last week.
Man. Infect is at its best when nobody's gunning for it. And so is Abzan Company, so that's not surprising to me.
I mean, Infect and Abzan Company... When Abzan Company is doing well, that holds down Infect a little bit. To some extent.
Yeah,
so seeing Abzan Company bounce back up just makes it a little bit tougher. I would say Infect at GPLA, there were a number of people playing it and doing well, but none of them were quite able to convert in the end.
The one that's interesting here, Bant Eldrazi specifically, is this it? Is this the Eldrazi deck that is going to make its way into the metagame?
I mean, Ancient Stirrings is great. All of the usual suspects in Eldrazi are great.
Yeah, it's got Reality Smasher and Thought Knots here. Some of them did have Reality Shaper. Mattery Shaper. Thank you.
To be fair, I believe most of the points came from a single top 4 from Pascal Maynard. So
that would give you 4 points, which is half.
Sure. I just mean when you get... I think there were a number of people who he had...
There were three total decks, so a 4-pointer, a 2-pointer, and a 1-pointer.
Yeah, my impression was that there were a number of very good players playing Bant Eldrazi. I mean, obviously the deck is linear enough that it doesn't help it as much as it would some decks, but I'm not completely sold that this is a much better choice than some other things, and you're not just getting some really great pilots on a deck that's fine.
Yeah, and I think that a deck like that, you can also get some freebies, because it's what exactly is going on across the table from me? Like, do I play around Reality Smasher and Thought Knots here? Do I think he's going bigger? Do I think it's smaller? Is it an aggro deck? Is it a big deck? Where, like, certain, like, Mattery Shaper makes you ask a lot of questions about what the matchup is about. And then while you're busy asking those questions, you're getting Reality Smashered.
Sure. And Thought Knots seared at the same time, right? Like, they might make it so that you don't get to ask the question.
I would imagine the best draws with this deck are very uninteractive and over very quickly. I mean, well, if you go
your
like
best draws
Noble
still
Hierarch
include
into
a turn
Eldrazi
2
Temple into, you know, Thought Knots seared.
No, turn 2 Thought Knots seared is still unreal, right? Like, that's not a fair...
Right, that's still basically unbeatable.
Right.
So I'm saying, like,
right. So it's
how do you
it's
ever
best it's best draws on the play, especially, or just you're not going to lose.
Yeah, which it's
that's true of
is
most
that
of
not
the
better
on
the
draws?
I think it's better on the play because
it's
like,
always better on
they
the play.
Might have a remand or something if you're on the draw.
Okay.
On the play, it's just unbeatable.
I mean, just generally, if you're proactive, I think being on the play is pretty much always going to be better just because they're going to have less mana available to answer what you're trying to do. I mean, if you thought Nuts here and they only have one mana up, you know, you're taking away...
Isn't they actually so don't I have find answers. It I find it interesting that you're saying like this deck might have gotten its points from great players, but like so like let's say that there's six people on this team that's testing with this deck. That's not a lot of people at an event, mm-hmm. right? So like while they all might be great, if 50% of them like top 32 the event, this deck might be insane.
That is true. I mean, it depends both. On it depends on you know
it can be either or too. Like
right.
yeah,
it all depends. But like. Let's not pretend that we said we didn't give that argument last week to red green Volokut, which seven people were on and got it. It made the cut with three of them, right?
Sure.
We said
sure.
that in on that scenario, we said this deck was great. So I think that there is a happy medium, but that's how formats get broken, right?
Right. No, I mean the deck is certainly powerful. I just. Before you run out and buy $400 of cards to play this deck every week. Just
I mean, you probably already have them on Moto because that deck costs nothing, so...
Sure.
Yeah, just, especially if you already bought into Eldrazi, you actually have all of the cards.
Yeah.
Just know that it's what you want to be doing outside of it being great.
Yeah.
So let's break into the decks that that make up our top four. Next up, we have Scapeshift. All of these were rug-based, and then I think there were four that did well. Let's look. There was more than that. There was one, two, three, four, five. So I believe three of the five were Bring to Light. And then the other two were Rug.
So there was no red-green?
No, all of them were Rug-based, and then they were either splashing white. I think they were all splashing white, but maybe I'm wrong. Maybe one of them was splashing black for Damnation.
Yeah, I mean, whether you're splashing black or white is mostly not a difference.
No, I think the difference is that you are supposed to splash white. Supreme Verdict and... It's just better, and you should be playing that over the others,
yeah,
and then you should be playing Path to Exile out of the board.
Yeah. I've basically actually never seen a card that, or a deck that played Damnation that actually had other black cards, other than once in a while, like a Slaughter Pact or something out of the board, and I think the Path to Exile is comparable enough to Slaughter Pact that...
Sure. Yeah.
That it, and Supreme Verdict is enough better than Damnation just in general, that it's probably better to go white instead of black.
Yeah, I think that you... I'm not sure. As like me personally, I bought all of the cards for the Bring to Light deck. I brought the Hunting Wilds. I bought everything.
Well, I feel like I can wrap this whole debate up in one question. Merfolk just won a GP. Would you rather be playing Slaughter or playing Damnations or Supreme Verdicts?
Supreme Verdicts.
Okay.
Yep. There you go.
Well, White's better. No. My question is whether you should be playing the Bring to Light version versus just playing Rug.
Oh, sure. I think that it depends on how often you think that Primeval Titan is good enough.
I think that the other question, well, I might be the only person that plays Rug Primeval Titan. They all play Prismatic Omens.
Oh. So Prismatic Omen is basically never good enough.
That's my thought. That's why I play Primeval Titan. but I think the real question is how good do you think Peer Through Depths is? Because I think that might change your question all entirely. If you can play Peer Through Depths instead of Titans, play less Scapeshifts and Bring Delights, that might be good enough. Because does it really matter? You really need to leave up enough mana to like play around remand? Probably not.
Yeah, in a post-Splinter Twin world, like the extra mana cost is actually not a big cost for Scapeshift.
Yeah, that's my thought also. It could be that you'd rather just play the Bring to Light version, and all of my testing with the Bring to Light version on Cockatrice was, yeah, I'd just rather play Rug, but if you're playing in significantly less remands, like, does it really matter? And the end... Does it really matter if your Bring to Light gets remanded?
I would also say both.
Not even at
both
all.
Less Bring to Lights and a lot less Blood Moons.
Yeah.
There. I mean, that's probably the biggest card that would make you...
You mean remands, not Bring to Lights.
Remands and Blood Moons.
You said Bring to Lights and Blood Moons.
Oh, did I? Yeah, sorry.
It's okay. You've been in a car for 10 hours.
Yeah.
Everything is forgiven.
I appreciate that. Thank you. I did not see a whole lot of Blood Moons this weekend. I mean, I know there were a couple of decks that were doing well that were playing Blood Moon, but I don't think Blood Moon fits as nicely into any of the top decks right now
with the best deck being able to play around Blood Moon so easily right now, and being a deck that used to be good against, I wouldn't play Blood Moon right now either.
Which I think kind of opens the door a little bit for like a Bring to Light style Scapeshift deck to be a reasonable choice. I mean, you're just not going to play this deck if you're expecting a lot of Blood Moons.
Right. There's a lot of decks.
It's going to be a miserable experience.
There's a lot of decks that can't beat Blood Moon, and I feel like this is kind of one of them. But, like,
So
the answer is, like, there's not a good Blood Moon deck right now, in my opinion.
The only version of Scapeshift to top 8 was the Bring to Light version.
Yeah, that sounds believable to me. I think it's probably a little bit better.
I would imagine that it rewards you for experience. It makes your opponent slightly more likely to misplay because they're less likely to know the exact contents of your deck. And it perhaps just gives you a little more flexibility in the matchups where being linear is less important.
To be honest, can we just be clear here, though? Like, Scapeshift has, like, a Volokut deck has done well for weeks and weeks and weeks now.
To reban Volokut.
No, can we just stop saying that, like, Volokut decks, Scapeshift decks are tier 2? Because they're not.
No, I mean, there's clearly some choice you can make just about every weekend that's going to work out for you.
Yeah, I think that Volokut is always viable. I feel like there's a bunch of different ways to build a, quote, Volokut deck, depending on, like, between two and
after losing
colors.
To the deck twice in one tournament, do you think that the green-red Scapeshift deck rather than the red-green Volokut deck, do you think that deck is viable?
It certainly felt viable. I feel like it's probably soft to unfair decks for the most part, but I feel like modern...
Because it has to turn 4.
Right. Right. And, like, your turn 4... It has to turn 4, and your turn 4 has to be good enough. Mm-hmm. Against Infect or Affinity, there's no guarantee that turn 4 is good enough, and there's no guarantee that Lightning Bolt is good enough to save you. So...
That's why I like these Bring to Light and these Rug decks. It's like, you have a real game plan outside of it that, like, lets you get to the point where it doesn't matter what they did.
Right. Where, like, there's plenty of times where Primeval Titan isn't going to be quite good enough for one reason or another, where playing 6 or 7 Scapeshifts in your deck is probably going to be good enough, because in my experience, that's the most likely way that Rug Scapeshift lost, was by just not hitting your Scapeshift in time. Where if you're playing more Scapeshifts, that's less likely to happen to you.
But also less actual Scapeshifts, so you're less likely to get Scapeshift flooded, right? I mean, that's the theory.
Right. Where Bring to Light, exactly. It can be Supreme Verdict, it can be Scapeshift, it can be whatever.
Combining one of my favorite standard decks of 1 week with my favorite modern deck of all time. It's not hard to convince me to do it. It's just that my testing of it wasn't very great. So I'm skeptical, but obviously, like, I love playing blue-green control decks, and this deck, like, fits the bill really well.
So I think when it was first printed, we were still living in Splinter Twin's world. And then we were living in Eldrazi's world. And it wasn't probably quite as good in either of those formats. But after that, I feel like now that the dust has settled, I think that it's probably just better than Rug Scapeshift.
I'm going to try it, so I hope so.
The versatility has some value, and that's basically the question you're asking, right? Is being slightly less streamlined worth the extra flexibility?
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Okay. Coming in with 11 points, we do have Merfolk. This deck won an event, so 6 of its 11 points came from that. But then it had 1, 2, 3, 4 more finishes.
Are only top 16 finishes good?
So it has has one top 16 and 3 top 32s.
Correct.
Right, for 5 points.
I know that Andre Strosky finished in 17th at LA with Merfolk.
Yeah. There were 3 top 32s and a top 16 with it. It actually came in, it was not going to make it. It came in with like a flurry of points at the end. A couple of decks did that didn't make it too. There were a couple of 6-pointers that had the same thing going on. Jeskai Control, for example, had 6 points. Almost all of its points came in at the very end. It's just sure. Like boom, 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 and I was like, whoa.
Yeah, I think that this deck is exciting, and I think that it has some very polarized matchups and some draws that are like so good, and then draws that are so bad. Like,
This is a metagame deck.
Yeah, I agree. I'm
I'm fine with if like
I think it's
I good, think that this was a great choice for this weekend.
Oh, definitely. And I like that we are in a format where this deck can be viable, because it's a really fun deck to play, and I've liked playing Merfolk in basically every format.
It's my second favorite Legacy deck of all time, so I'm glad that like it's getting some spotlight here.
The games get relatively interesting too. I mean, for a deck that feels
it's weirdly interesting.
For a deck that feels very like linear creature deck.
It's not linear. You have to play correctly and have the right draws. And it's different. Were you playing you played Merfolk against me for like it felt like it's 7 matches against Jund, and it was like, is this matchup bad? And it started, I think you started out 4-0 and it ended 5-3 or something. That was like in games, by the way, not matches. Yeah. The wins for me felt hard, and the wins for you were lopsided, and it was like it the deck, right. Man, Master Waves is a magic card,
right? And just a little bit goes a long way. A Spreading Seas on turn 2 can sometimes just be game over.
Yeah,
and a Vapor Snag here, a Vapor Snag there, is usually game over.
I actually think that Spreading Seas is better against Jund than Blood Moon is at this point.
Yeah, strangely, because like you can fetch up your basics,
yeah,
but like this punishes you for doing that.
Yeah, it's like, oh, you fetched up a basic. Well, that's an island now, and
but
it's
it
like,
gets
well,
you either way, right? Because exactly. If you're constantly fetching dual lands and taking damage to cast spells, you're sort of getting them on both ends with the Spreading Seas.
This Jund right? can't true. Take the old Jund's approach to the Spreading Seas tech, where they had Jace the Mind Sculptors in the sideboard. And Misty Rainforest in the main deck so that they can sideboard into Jace the Mind Sculptor.
Jace Architect of Thought is pretty good too, man.
That could be good enough.
It's probably not good enough.
I mean, if you plus that card enough times against Merfolk, I don't think they win.
Sure, but you're already dead on board by the time you play it.
You'd have to play a lot against Merfolk for that to be a real thing.
The Jace the Mind Sculptor attack against Spreading Seas was the sweetness, but it's definitely not fast enough in Modern. I'm a huge fan. It's too bad Manny's not on this podcast. He could talk a lot more about this deck. But I have played this deck quite a bit in Modern because I think it's sweet. I love the Spreading Seas interaction to like turn like in Legacy when you play Merfolk, for those who don't know, like everybody already plays islands.
So Spreading Seas doesn't actually do anything.
Yeah.
Just two mana, draw a card.
Yeah. But in Modern, like green's the best color. So you need Spreading Seas to make your guys get through there. It's pretty sweet. And overall, I'm glad that this deck can punish the format when it needs to be punished and then go away and then come back and like... Yeah. It's kind of like Affinity sometimes is as well.
Right, and I don't think we addressed this enough with Spreading Seas. It's the reason that I think that Spreading Seas is great against Jund, more so than color screwing your opponent, is man land screwing your opponent.
That's true.
Because like man lands are your best way to win with Jund. Usually like creatures trade off whatever, then your lands can win the game.
True.
In the late game, and like you're cutting that off from them and then just killing them.
It's like a 2-for-1. It really is a 2-for-1. But
it also but just punishes awkward draws. I mean, it's the kind of thing that can end a game really quickly if, you know, Jund is on 2 or 3 lands and suddenly can't cast Liliana or Abrupt
Decay. But also, well, the thing, even then, like even if they can cast Abrupt Decay on, like let's say that they like want to Abrupt Decay your Spreading Seas, it's like,
what is
man,
that?
They already drew a card.
A 2-for-0?
It's a nothing. It's the
and
worst.
They're not affecting the board. I mean, that it seems like if you're Abrupt Decaying a Spreading Seas, I think you're in trouble.
Right, and then you're all okay. Abrupt Decay your Spreading Seas. Take 7. Your turn. Like,
yeah, I don't need the Spreading Seas anymore. They were unblockable because you tapped out for Abrupt Decay.
Yeah. So it's a hard sell.
Coming in with 13 points, we have Affinity. If we look at last week's, I don't even believe Affinity was on that list.
I don't believe it was either. In fact, I'm quite sure it
was. It was not. Honestly, like I looked at a lot of sideboards. Come on, guys. Have to play the cards to beat Affinity.
I take full responsibility for this. Actually, I thought that 2 Stony Silences would be enough, and it's not. It's not close to enough. I know that you need 7 sideboard cards for Affinity,
or a reasonable main deck and 4.
Right. Yeah. If you have 4 bolts, 4 paths, and some number of helixes, and then like 4 sideboard cards, that's probably enough.
Or, you know, electrolyze, lightning bolt, anything that 2-for-1's in your main deck, plus Shatterstorm and other things in your sideboard is enough.
Yeah. But like, it's a lot. You need like a solid 7 to 10 hate cards between main and side.
Yeah.
And like 1 mana removal is a hate card, and like 2-for-1's are a hate card.
But specifically need 2-for-1s in your main, otherwise your sideboard tax goes up.
Yeah.
You need Electrolyze or Kulligan's Command.
You need a lot is the thing.
The other thing is you just need to close, you need cards that either blow them out or close the game
out
really
quickly. How does Fork Bolt not see Modern play at this point?
I've actually dropped Electrolyzes for Fork Bolts for the rest of my life.
Oh, so, that seems interesting.
Yeah, I think Electrolyze costing 3 mana is actually like, makes that card basically unplayable to me. I've just died with Electrolyze way too much. Like, it's been too slow. where I think Forked Bowl is what you need. So if like if I don't, you want that
I for one have played the main deck one of Forked Bolt in my gen decks in Modern before, and it's totally reasonable. That thing kills a lot of things and then also pulls a lot of weight.
Yeah, I switched to Forked Bolt in the Treasure Cruise Delver era, and just never switched back because like I was like, oh man, this card was actually just always better, and we were just playing Electrolyze because we were greedy. But actually, like, just play Forked Bolt. PSA time.
So, public service announcement other than that one. You need sideboard cards for this matchup. You can't get... Like, I looked at a lot of sideboards. There were not enough.
Right. Either have your full, like... Either pay the tax or don't, also. Don't play two sideboard cards
I agree.
For Affinity.
Don't play two sideboard... I completely agree. It's because not
it's
worth
it. Because it's not enough. It's not going to win you the game. And you're, like, just playing a 13-card sideboard. So, like, two Stony Silences in your sideboard plus Paths in your main isn't enough. Because you need 7 to 8. You know, that only leaves you at 6, and that's not enough. You're going to lose every match against Affinity, and you're playing a 13-card sideboard.
I think this is an important thing to note for Jun, too. Because, like, there are just no Ancient Grudges in Jun sideboards right now. And, honestly, like, I understand that you just got a card in your main deck that's really good. Against that deck. But, like...
You need to play Grudges or Shatterstorms.
You still need something. That matchup was, like, pretty close to, like, 45-55 in Affinity's favor before that card was printed.
Yeah, and that was with 7 sideboard cards.
Yeah, that was before Colgan's Command, you needed a lot of sideboard. At this point, like, I'm sure your game ones feel really good, and that's what you test the most of. But you... It's just so fast. It's so good. It's so efficient. It does the same thing every game.
Right. A Mizzium Skin or a Spell Pierce or a Thoughtseize goes a long way to blowing that kind of thing out of the water.
And then when they have Thoughtseize and Spell Pierce.
And then you lose because you didn't play Shatterstorm.
The biggest issue generally is that no matter how many cards you sideboard, it's a single Thoughtseize is really going to bust it up a lot of the time if they're able to Thoughtseize you.
So you have the opinion that you just don't pay the tax at all?
No, I'm just saying that sometimes you're going to pay the tax and still lose. The deck is really good. I think it's a really good choice.
But if everybody's paying the tax, that's not true. The deck can't win.
Well, it maybe can't win a large event, but it doesn't. You're not so asking everyone to pay the taxes.
Here's the thing.
No,
that's what makes it a tax. Is people like to evade them.
I was just going to say what you're going to say.
We all, if everybody pays it, then the problem goes away. If people try to skirt the responsibility. Then it rears its ugly head time and time again. And, like, I've been a huge advocate for everybody has to do their part to keep Affinity out of the format. And that's why by choosing to not do that in my last Modern tournament, I take full responsibility.
That's why he just took full responsibility.
This was my fault. So I'm sorry. Everybody,
what you're saying is this is a tragedy of the commons?
Yes.
I think it's true. I think the reason it's called the tax is because if we don't all do our part... Then we have a problem.
The country falls apart and Affinity wins.
Affinity win. Affinity is the bad guy. Like, let's not pretend it's not. It's been the bad guy since day one. Right. There's not even cards with Affinity in it anymore.
It had a short time.
Hold on, everybody. We have to talk at once. Different people have to talk at different times.
Yeah. It got so banned in Standard and still was the best deck.
Exactly.
That's hard to do.
Right. People played 12 main deck hate cards against it. And it had its best cards banned, and it was still the best deck.
And its best cards are still not in Modern.
Right, because still, like, you can't
because it would be trusted
with some
of the best Modern deck if you were allowed to play the Artifact lands.
Obviously, but that's what I'm saying is, like, guys, we have to do our part.
Against the somehow still dominant remaining pieces of Affinity.
I think it's the villain, and that's fine.
No, as I said, but it did have a short window. I think that for the duration of Pro Tour Oath of the Gatewatch, Affinity was basically the last bastion.
It was the good guy?
Yeah.
So the new bad guy was so bad that he became the real bad guy and the old bad guy.
This happens.
It was expert storytelling.
No, I was going to say, it's like how you wish that you had... King Joffrey back when you saw Ramsay Bolton.
Right. The devil you know is better than the devil you don't.
I don't know. As someone who was playing Standard as about a
12-year-old... Oh, I thought you were going to go into Game of Thrones.
No.
Right
as someone who was playing Standard as about a 12-year-old at the time Mirrodin came out, Don't try to tell me Affinity can't ever be the good guy. That deck tarnished my childhood.
Well, dude, so like I started playing Magic for the first time as older than most people, but I was chased right away by fairies. So like I had the same feelings about Bitter Blossom being unbanned. I was like, no, don't do that.
I mean, the thing is that I distinctly remember sleeving up a deck with like 4 main deck Oxidize, 4 Viridian Shamans, and 4 Molder Slugs, which...
Dude, and for those who don't know, Oxidize is not playable.
And I got stomped by Affinity like twice in the same event with a deck playing, you know, 12 main deck hate cards and probably 8 more in the sideboard.
And it wasn't close to good enough.
For those who don't know, it oxidizes 1 green. To destroy target artifact, it can't be regenerated.
That seems fine in that format. That actually seems broken. It's like the broken version of Swords to Plowshares.
Affinity was so good that Affinity decks were main decking Electrostatic Bolt and sideboarding Oxidize.
You do what you have to do to get by, Michael.
Yeah, that's...
Let's talk about the deck that comes in at number 1 2 weeks in a row for Modern. And that's Jund, this week coming in with 15 points. I'm not surprised. I think that in formats like Modern, where they've done a pretty good job of keeping like the really unfair decks out of Modern, I think that I understand people don't like Jund, but I think Jund being the best deck is really healthy for the metagame because it makes points where things like Merfolk or Amulet or Grishelbrand, it makes it where there's weeks where you can spike an event because you figured it out. And I think that's good.
Yeah, and I think that Jund is in a good place right now where
it still needs Blood Red Elf, but...
No, I think it's good right now. I think it needs nothing.
Blood Red Elf. That's not even...
Modern would be unplayable.
I actually don't know that you would even play Blood Red Elf in this version of Jund.
That sounds like crazy talk to me.
It sounds like crazy...
I feel like you have gone too long without playing a Blood Red Elf. You forgot what it's like.
Because
it's 4 mana, win the game.
Admittedly, having not played a ton of Modern, my impression of Jund is that you will very rarely lose a match against Jund where you felt like you didn't have a chance and the games were unfair.
Right, like, because you've never played against Blood Red Elf. Exactly. My point, gosh. Exactly.
But this version, it's not abusive. I mean, it plays all the best cards. It's very efficient, but you never come away thinking that interaction shouldn't work like that. It's the same version. It's a good deck.
It's the same version. It hasn't changed. It's the same deck. Casey's just a whiner.
Right. They took the best card out of it.
Yeah, and then Deathrite Shaman.
After taking the second best card out of it. And now the deck is reasonable.
I think that it might play 2 or 3. I don't think that this is a 4 of Blood Red Elf deck. Like, just looking at the decks and how they're constructed and like what you want out of the deck, I think the format has also changed enough that like it's very... There are some versions of Jund that play 0/4 drops. And I don't think that would change.
Yeah, I think that you would still play some Blood Red Elf because
it's... Yeah, I think
an
that it could be a 3
card.
Of just like in Legacy or a 2 of just like in Legacy.
Yeah, but I think that like...
But I think that there...
I think that
a lot of decks have turn 4 kills.
So let me... I get where you're coming from on this, but I think that Blood Red Elf would do enough to elevate Jund as a power in Modern. And Blood Red Elf is so important for winning the mirror in Modern because it's... Or again, like the Jund mirror period, that it by its own existence changes what you can play in Jund, which makes it not an automatic 4 of.
I don't know if that
because if you're playing 4 Blood Red Elves and all the chumps that are playing 2 Blood Red Elves are just going to get trampled, they can never compete. So like, I think that...
So we all agree that Jund... Do we all agree that Jund being the best deck in Modern is a good thing? And that, hold on, the last time that Modern was great, Jund was the best deck.
No,
Modern
the,
has
the
sucked.
The only time Modern was great, Delver was the best deck. But
that's not true.
I think it's a sign of a healthy
Jund
format.
Has not been great since, or Modern has not been great since Jund was the best deck. It was the best format then. It's now the best format again, I believe. And Jund's the best deck again. I think
that's an opinion that you're entitled to.
I don't even want to play Jund, and I think Modern's the best format again. They did it. They made Modern great again. This format is amazing. This format is better than Legacy, and it takes... Well, I mean, also, Legacy sucks right now because they can't ban the stupid top. But, like, I'm in love. I would play and have played every single deck that we've talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I've played basically all of these decks, and I've warmed up to Jund, and I think that it's like a year and a half of Abzan and Standard and Modern have made Jund feel elegant to me. I still feel like it's a very blunt instrument and not that interesting, like especially in Mirrors, but I'm more warm to it than I used to be. And I think that, like, just by virtue of playing the best hate card against every combo deck ever printed, Tarmogoyf, is insane. Like, just having access to that is powerful, and then also, like, the rest of the Jund package is good.
I don't know if it was on a podcast or a video, but I basically openly admitted that I love Tarmogoyf decks, and I think that Tarmogoyf is the best thing that ever happened to Magic.
Yeah.
I think that without Tarmogoyf, Magic would be unplayable.
I used to hate Tarmogoyf until I realized that it's just, like, it's the unsung hero of Magic. And I
agree really completely. Is.
Like, I've played so many Tarmogoyf decks now that, like,
Magic without it. Mistake that ever was the greatest thing that ever happened.
So I think it's quite healthy in a format like Modern because it helps the fair decks compete with the power of the unfair decks.
Exactly.
The fair
You're
decks
on notice.
Powerful cards too, right? I mean, you can't just let people play with Primeval Titan and Scapeshift and, you know, infect creatures and become immense and then say, well, sorry, Jund, your best creature is a 2/1
well,
for two
it
mana.
Also, it also makes it so, like, it, on that note, too, like, if you think about Modern, like, what is the best color combinations? It's probably Bug and Rug, right? Those are the two color combinations that usually cause the most trouble, probably because of Tarmogoyf, but they're the color combinations that are, like, in the history of Magic, it's like, when you think of, like, a no Rug, Rug Delver, Team America, you know, all these, like, decks.
So,
that, like,
the most insane decks ever made in the history of Magic are blue-black decks by a lot. And then blue-white decks by a lot. And then after that, it's probably Bug and Rug.
But what I'm getting at is why the Tarmogoyf does something different in Modern than it does in Legacy. And I think it's a thing of beauty. Why isn't Rug mid-range a deck in Modern? Because you can't be opposing Tarmogoyfs.
Right, and that's what I noticed trying to play that deck, where it was just like, I'm playing Roast and they're playing Terminate and my life is bad.
Yeah, or you're playing like Flame Slash Snapcaster. It's like, it's this thing where in Modern, Tarmogoyf is beautiful. In Legacy, Tarmogoyf doesn't really matter. It matters somewhat, but like...
it matters a lot.
Team America, Rug Delver... Bug right now is the second best deck.
So, Spencer, just Mavericks, so I'm understanding you, you're saying that it's not only having your own Tarmogoyfs, but being able to efficiently answer your opponent's Tarmogoyfs that is a big difference maker in fair matchups?
In fair matchups, in unfair matchups, Tarmogoyf might have made it so that Magic wasn't awful. And it's also considered a mistake.
If it weren't for Tarmogoyf, you'd play against Burn a lot. And people like, don't realize that how good Tarmogoyf is against decks like Burn or even like Splinter Twin or Sneak and Show or Storm, because it just puts your opponent on notice. Okay, you have 4 turns to win this game starting now.
Right, it forces you to actually close a game out, not just get Thoughtseize 4 times, get in the top deck war, eventually redraw my combo.
Think about the number of times that people have said, all right, they have to go off this turn. How many of the times that that's been said involved the fact that there was a Tarmogoyf in play?
I mean, I was going to say most of the matches I saw this weekend between, you know, Jund and combo decks,
and
that's what it comes
and
down
the fact
to.
That people say, oh, you can't play this combo deck because sometimes you don't get there, is caused by Tarmogoyf. And that's okay. That's okay. That's what makes, I believe that might be what is making Modern great. Because if you think about it, with Jund being the best deck, the Tarmogoyf deck being the best deck 2 weeks in a row, what is it doing? Well, it's causing things like Infect, like the Vengeance deck, like Abzan Company, all of these decks, they're like Casey, they're put on notice, and that's beautiful.
I mean,
because that makes interesting, exciting games of Magic, because when they get there, it's great. When they don't get there, it's great. It's kind of beautiful. I love Magic.
Yeah, I mean, in my last Modern tournament, I top eighted the States tournament playing like attacking with Tarmogoyfs a lot. I mean, it was a lot of Knight of the Reliquaries too, but it was Tarmogoyfs. It was Kasali Pride Mages. It was, you know, green creatures. But, like, Tarmogoyf just really ties the room together for that type of deck, where it says, hey, it doesn't matter what you're doing. Like, this is going to be good enough, and it's going to be good enough fast.
And I think that, like, when you think about things like Grixis, where it's like, you know, we don't really need Tarmogoyf. We have Tassadar and Gurmag Angler. In the end, you're like, you know what? It's just not as elegant and not as beautiful.
Because you have to play garbage like Thought Scour in your deck. Where if you can go Thought Seize Tarmogoyf, that's so much better than any like
Inquisition
Thought Scour Tassigar turn.
I always wonder about this looking at Grixis in Modern especially. I mean, I know people have done well with that deck on occasion, but it looks to me like if you're feeling like you have to answer Tarmogoyf, but the reason you want blue is Snapcaster Mage, and then you're adding Tassigar or Gurmag Angler, there's sort of a like inherent tension in your game plan that just isn't present in a deck like Jund.
Right. Jund is just, it's all business. Where Grixis, like, your best draws.
I'm so proud of you, Casey.
I mean, I'm a well-known Grixis hater in Modern.
Well, but that's not what I mean, but
I think that Jund, like I said, a year and a half of Abzan and Standard and Modern makes Jund feel elegant by comparison. Because both of those decks are extremely blunt. Where Jund actually has play to it.
Clunky. Abzan and Standard is straight up. The mana is weird.
I think you didn't play against great Abzan, right? You played against good Abzan, but not great Abzan.
That's
no. He played Abzan aggro in that standard format with Hangerback Walker against me in our first match and beat me.
Yeah, so that was good. I think that was good Abzan, not great Abzan. Did you play Elspeth Abzan?
Yes.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Deck had Elspeth in it.
He top decked three Elspeths or two Elspeths.
It was only two.
Okay. Sorry.
Only two.
Because that deck felt insane, but it felt exactly clunky, blunt. All of your cards were very powerful, but not interesting.
The cards are just so much better than your opponents that you kind of can't help but win.
Right. Where Jund, like, you're like just a guy trying to make a living with Dark Confidence and Terminates.
I mean, to be fair, right?
When like, those cards are both insane,
so,
but yeah.
Feels so real good. When we look at, like, this format, there's, like, I have this list in front of me. There's so many decks. And the format is so great. And maybe we were wrong. Maybe banning Splinterdome was, like, so great.
Well, they also unbanned Ancestral Vision, which has made me appreciate Modern a lot, because it's like playing Treasure Cruise, only not insane. It's just unbeatable. But it's not as, like, obviously unbeatable.
I think it's more that you're not sort of priced into playing Splinter Twin if you want to play Blue-Red or Grixis, and then every other deck isn't forced into playing a bunch of answers to Splinter Twin specifically. Like, when you just kind of knock out... I mean, Jund, for all its... It's very good, but I can't imagine you're playing a lot of Jund hate cards.
You can't.
Right, because what,
right. Rest, I mean, wait, there's nothing to really...
Rest in Peace used to be pretty good, now it's kind of mediocre. Blood Moon used to be pretty good. Now it's kind of medium.
Just as a general rule, I think formats get better when you're...
I think having a deck like that existing is a good thing.
I think formats get better when you're able to move more away from hate cards.
Right. Yes and no. So yes in the... So like having decks like Jund exist and having decks like Chartless Bug exist is a good thing for a few reasons. It keeps formats in check in a fair way. And then also it makes it so like, all right, if all of you were going to play Jund, you're idiots. I'm just going to play Sneak Attack or
right,
Storm or...
I feel like that is a weakness in Modern, though, is that there's not a deck... Tron used to be that deck, but I feel like it's not like quite the same anymore. With
cause now I you think can go, you could play Goryeo's Vengeance in that field and like destroy it.
Maybe. Like, that's only good for a week, right? Because then they just play...
Right, but do you need more than a week?
Yeah, I think that there needs to actually be a hard counter to Jund, like Sneak and Show was in Legacy. They said, okay, if you're all going to play Jund, I'm going to embarrass you. I don't feel like you have that week in and week out in Modern, where like that's what caused Modern to stagnate around Jund before, and I don't want that to happen again.
I don't want it to happen either, but luckily Scapeshift exists.
Is that the same amount of Stone Cold?
Like, I think that matchup. I think that matchup is almost unwinnable for Jund, especially if they have 9 Scapeshifts in their deck.
My impression of Jund is that it. I mean, it's the kind of deck that
it's only funny because it's not
it'll
true.
Put up great results when you get a lot of people playing it, and when you get great players playing it. But none of your matchups, at least this is my impression, are so good that it's a bad deck to have as the best deck in the format.
Exactly.
Well, and it's an interesting deck in the sense that like. It's a deck where a lot of people will X3 with a deck, and like it used to like do really well at the GP circuit, but isn't Yuya Watanabe still the only human being to ever top 8 a Pro Tour in Modern with Jund?
No, I
think the point
didn't
being
Brian Kibler also
the point being that it doesn't matter what so. Yuya plays, he just does what he
I'm
wants.
Pretty sure that there were a lot of Juns with Death Ray Shamans in it at the Pro Tour, right?
No, he was the only one that played that deck.
No, Brian Kibler was in the same Pro Tour top 8 with Jun with Death Ray Shaman, right?
He
put the F6 in play.
I think that was at a GP. I don't think that he top 8ed that tournament. I think that Yuya was the only one playing Death Rite Shamans because Death Rite Shaman was only legal for one Pro Tour.
Okay.
And it was the first one that it was ever printed for. Okay. I think Yuya was the only one smart enough to play it.
Go Yuya.
And then that Pro Tour was dominated by Eggs because how could you ever possibly beat Eggs with Jund?
So, in the end, I think that we've talked a lot. And I think that we've all, I think the, none of us hate Modern right now, and that's like the first in a long time.
Yeah, it's felt more fun than it has in a while. I'm still trying to find the best Ancestral Vision deck, and when I do that, like, I'll probably be pretty happy with Modern again.
I think it might be, I did get to play, by the way, because last week I said I hadn't played it, but I thought it was bad. I did get to play, the Nahiri deck with Ancestral Visions.
That so, Matt Kling talked me into playing Serum Visions in that deck instead of the Ancestral Visions.
I played both.
Okay, I feel like Nahiri is the in Modern is the most overrated thing I've ever heard of.
So I agree, but it makes your Ancestral Visions way better.
Really? Because I felt like every time I just drew the Emrakul, and then my life was bad.
Well, if you draw the Emrakul instead of the Nahiri, your life is bad.
Yeah.
But I feel like your percentage on that is really low, Casey.
Yeah, but it felt like it happened a lot because I was drawing so many cards. But that was even without the Ancestrals. I don't know. I felt like Nahiri Jeskai felt actually unplayable and the most overrated thing I've ever heard of. Kiki Jiki Jeskai, which I didn't think was possible.
I played against Kiki Jiki Jeskai with Visions in it, by the way, in our my playtesting with one of our patrons, and it was great. But either way, everything aside, we've been talking for an hour. I love Modern. We all love Modern. It's great. Just cashed your first GP in Modern. Check it out, guys. Like, the difference here is there's no Tron on this. But man, this format is so sweet. Well,
it just shows you if you like a deck and you have reason to believe it's good enough, it probably is.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if you think about it, another deck didn't even make our list that won the other GP.
Which was what?
Ad Nauseam.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, I also think that is a deck that can put Jund on notice to some extent.
Yeah.
But also the deck is just, like, slightly bad. So
I think it's sweet.
Jund,
interesting.
I think it's sweet, but I don't think it's very good.
I don't think Ad Nauseam lines up especially well against Jund. Where it does line up extremely well is against Burn.
Yeah, I mean, it's 100-0 against Burn, or close to. But I think it is actually pretty good against Jund, just because if you have it, they can't really beat it.
I did some testing against that with Jund, and I found that, like, basically they can't beat a Tharsis Karmogoyf. Just actually at all. That's too fast for them.
Having talked to Travis, who was playing Ad Nauseam this weekend and has played that deck for a long time, his feeling was that the matchup is all right for Ad Nauseam, but they have specific, if their interaction lines up well with the pieces you have, you're just dead.
Yeah.
As the Ad Nauseam player. Well, and there's nothing
that's just
you
true
can
against
about it.
As combo decks against control decks in general, that's true.
Sure. I think the difference is that with the Jund disruption being more proactive, there's a little bit less you can do about it. Yeah. You can't really stop yourself from getting Thought Seized on turn one, and if Thought Seize is great against your hand, you're just kind of dead.
But so to expand on that, though, I do think that the matchup is probably decent for the deck at large, but I think that, the deck is just kind of bad. As far as, like, your matchups go, that's probably actually one of your better ones, but the deck just isn't very good, in my opinion.
Well, we've talked about Modern for a long time, which is good. That means the format's good. But let's move on to our training. So this week we want to talk about what's your edge. In a match of Magic, one player might be better at this or that than their opponent. Someone might have skills that are more developed than their opponents in one aspect or another. But what makes you who you are as a Magic player? And that's kind of what we want to talk about. So this week we want to discuss the things that are your advantage and the things that can maybe give you an advantage. So in broad strokes, we're going to talk about what you specifically have at the end of the podcast, Casey and Michael. But between the two of you, What do you two think are things that you can gain an advantage in or an edge in Magic?
Well, the biggest one is understanding what the matchup is about.
That obviously comes into play a lot when you get players who are evaluating cards differently in a matchup. It generally means one of them is wrong and that player is dead.
Right. Exactly. It is a sort of a microcosm of the who's the beatdown.
Right. Concept. But that can sometimes be a lot more complicated and even change within a game. I think it stems from sort of situation evaluation. So I think that's one place a player can gain a big edge.
Yeah.
But it's also hard to control for how good your opponent might be at such a thing. So sometimes it's not gaining an edge. It's more not getting destroyed.
One. Yes. Yeah. Well, like, for example, I'm going to rely on a lot of Splinter Twin examples for the rest of my life because that was such an interesting deck. But people would sometimes board in, like, naturalizes in matchups where I had boarded out my combo.
Sure.
Because they couldn't afford not to, but I also knew that they would have access to that kind of effect. And like right. It just the combo became a liability.
They knew you could have it. You knew they had to have it.
Exactly. So like I would go to zero Splinter Twins because
right.
they boarded in all these like
now you're
dead
playing
cards.
A control deck against a deck that has like at least four cards that
right.
are mulligans.
So exactly. Right? And they can't actually mulligan them because they can't win if I have it. So like
right.
You're creating a prisoner's dilemma for your opponent. So being able to understand the matchup well enough to do that is a huge way to gain an advantage.
And what are some other ways? So outside of like understanding a matchup,
I think in general just like making an effort to get as much knowledge as you can before an event begins. Just trying to like to know basically what the common 75s are. Like just knowing the cards that are likely in your opponent's deck and sideboard on turn two versus, you know, after a match saying, huh, I didn't know that deck could play.
I think that's a huge advantage. We talked about it a few weeks ago with, I mentioned it when your opponents in the Bant Mirror were like, oh, like you were playing Eldrazi Displacer. They weren't. You weren't playing.
Sure, but right. I mean,
lands if that they
if,
were.
If you don't even know what kind of, you know, if you don't even know what cards I could be playing,
right.
It is really hard to play
right.
around them.
And not knowing, true. Like what the tech is that's coming out or that came out, and like there's so much going into that, and I think that actually feeds into one of my things that I think are one of your biggest edges, which is knowing what your opponent could have and like reading them. So you're talking about knowing what your opponent have. The next step is like reading them for what that is,
right? So you might say, okay, well, they could have, based on what I think is in their 75, they could have Dromoka's Command, but they had a good opportunity to use a Dromoka's Command at some point because you probably can't play around every card the entire game every game, and they didn't cast it. So you say, well, at that point, I don't think they had it, even if they were bluffing it, because that would have been a good window. Something yeah. like that.
And another, like a huge one, is knowing your deck, what you can expect out of your deck, what decks can keep two lenders, what decks can't, things like that. Like if you're playing a deck cold, you're giving up a huge edge versus somebody who knows the deck and knows what the deck is capable of and what it's consistent in doing.
This is something I feel like I've been harping on lately, but knowing what you can beat too, because there's no sense in playing around a card you're just never beating, even if you try your hardest to play around it. Right. You know, all that's going to happen is you're going to open yourself up to
losing to more
cards. To losing to a card that you weren't even thinking about when you never could have beaten the Avacyn or the Secure the Wastes or whatever anyways.
Holding the hanger, holding the Arcbound Ravager, trying to beat the Shatterstorm that you were 0% to beat no matter how many Arcbound
exactly.
Ravagers are in your hand.
Exactly.
It just isn't worth it.
Right. If you're going to lose your Glimmer Void, your Mox Opal, and every creature on your board,
your follow-up Arcbound Ravager that's a 1-1
is not getting there.
So, Casey, how are these edges that we're talking about different than like specific edges that you might have in your preparation?
Well, because they're little things everybody can do to add up to a win percentage gap between them and the field. If you're picking up 1% across against the field by with these broad stroke like little things you can do, then it adds up to a lot of match
wins.
Yeah, if
it adds
over
up to
5%,
that's well, like get you from that 60 to the 65 or the 70 to the 75, like where it's like huge match.
The other thing you have to remember is that in most environments, like especially at say a PPTQ, you sort of have a round you can lose. That's okay. So what you need to do is beat players who aren't as prepared as you or aren't quite as good consistently. And the easiest way to do that is by maximizing all of these little edges, because it's more likely that they are helping you more in matches against worse opponents.
Right. Right. And so, like, it's turning, ahead, sorry, not to cut you off, but it's turning a 3-2 into a 4-1.
Exactly.
Right, which is the difference between a top 16 and a top 8.
Right, so maybe you didn't play perfect, but your understanding still was enough to get you there. I mean, nobody plays perfect.
So are these broad strokes edges, are they different than the things that you focus on individually, Michael and Casey, or are they the same thing?
Well, I try to not leave these things behind, because if you try to get too narrow and like miss the big things that you can do to win more matches, then you're just wasting your time. But I think that there are ways you can expand beyond just these things.
I think it comes down to, I mean, like, these are obviously pretty broad when you're talking about, like, playing around cards. It comes down, in my experience, the easiest way to gain an edge is just to have a knowledge of what your opponent is likely to have in different matchups. You know, if you know the top five decks pretty well, and you know, like, what spells and what creatures they're playing, you can start essentially practicing putting your opponent on specific cards, and from there trying to figure out what they have, what they could have, how you can lose, how you could win a game where maybe you have to take a strange line to win it. And I think when you're doing that stuff consistently, it adds up.
So, Michael, last week you talked about playing the best deck, because sometimes people might not know how to prepare against that deck. They might not have prepared against that deck. They just might not have good preparation against that deck. And this is like a huge edge that a lot of people execute. But how is that different than just being a net decker? Which, by the way, is the most insulting, stupid term I've ever heard in my life.
It's,
but what's the difference?
It's a silly term. That's the kind of thing
that bad players say. You need to remove it from your vocabulary.
It was in vogue like 8 years ago. And if you're still upset about people net decking,
people
you
were
need
saying
to get
that
over
in
it.
Like 2004. Oh, a lot. Man. Yeah.
So
a
it's even
more than
it
eight.
Goes deeper.
It was stale.
Since the invention of the internet,
yes.
People have been saying this.
It's
and
a ridiculous
you need to
thing
it.
To accuse you of, because by far the most interesting part of Magic is gameplay. And by far the most important part of Magic is gameplay. And when you're taking the best deck, you're not just saying, oh, this is the best deck, so I don't have to know what I'm doing. I'm just going to play cards and smash every opponent. What you're saying is, I'm going to take the best deck because when I play perfectly, there is no edge that I'm giving up. I'm not playing a deck that isn't pretty much optimal. I mean,
How is it different?
What I'm saying is, if you're just grabbing the best deck and expecting to win with it because it's the best deck, that's very flawed thinking, and that, I think, makes you a net decker, if you want to use that horrible expression.
Yeah, and I think that, like, it playing the best deck versus playing a bad deck, if you're not prepared for the tournament, like, it's still going to be beneficial to you. You might go 2-4 instead of 1-5, but it's not going to be enough, right? Like, that's just it's a good foundation to start with,
well,
but you need to be doing this other stuff.
I want to talk about something about this, because I didn't think it would come up, but it's interesting to think about. How is this different than the approach that maybe Jeff Hoagland or Travis Wu or Oliver, what is his name? Olive Saffron?
Saffron Olive?
Yeah.
That's like a Magic Online name, right?
Sure.
That's not his real name.
So how is it?
It would be a sweet name, though. I kind of wish.
How is this different than their approach? And, like, what is the edge that they gain? Like, is their edge better? It can't be better, and not enough people do it, right?
Well, it's different. And different is something that can be better for you or you or you, but it can't be better for everyone, right? Like, that's sort of like anybody can do this, but not everybody can do it, because if everybody's doing it, then it becomes less effective.
So I think there's some, you know, as you play against higher and higher level players, there's some edge in not having, you know, if all your opponents know all the 75s of the top 10 best decks in a given format, there's some edge in not being on one of those 75s, whether that's playing your own deck entirely or just having a little twist that they're not going to see coming. That can be really valuable because they won't expect it. But I think doing things that are different for the sake of being different is not good. Doing things that are different because you believe that it gives you an edge in some way, you believe that it helps you, that makes sense to me.
Yeah. I agree completely. Like, if you're identifying a hole in the metagame, like, if you're looking at your top 10 75s and not one of them has an edict effect, then Boggle's suddenly becomes number one of those top 10
so here's,
by a huge margin.
Here's the declarative statement that we'll get hate comments about. So you have a choice between Kiki Cord and Abzan Company. Which one are you taking? Because one of them is the better deck. One of them is just different to be different.
So I think that there are formats where both can be right. Like, similar to...
I don't think that. I think that Kiki Cord is bad Abzan Company.
I think that it's a different enough deck, and
I think... Have you tested the decks?
I've never played Kiki Cord, because I don't hate my life.
But I've tested... They have about the same matchups, and Abzan has better matchups.
Okay, if that's the case, I assume that it would be similar to Kiki Pod and Malira Pod, where, like, in the Pod Mirror, well, Kiki Pod was a huge favorite.
Sure.
So if that's not the case, then... Definitely don't just be different for its own sake.
That could be the case. I don't know that I ever tested that matchup.
Where, like, they had very similar matchups, but then that one just had a big edge in that one specific matchup.
Okay.
But was, like, a little bit worse against, like, instead of being, like, 50-50 against the field, it was, like, 45-55 against the field, but was a huge favorite in the mirror.
Okay. That could... I can honestly say that I've never tested that matchup, and I could... My declarative statement could be wrong, but in my opinion, and from my testing... Kiki Cord's just bad Abzan Company. And that's when you're being different for different sake. You're like, I don't want to play Abzan Company because I don't like mirror matches, so I'm going to play this. Whereas...
Yeah, just as a general rule, saying you don't like to play mirror matches is a really good way to end up playing bad decks.
I don't like playing mirror matches, so for that reason I play things like Rug, which has good matchup against Abzan.
But if you make declarative statements like, I just am never going to play a deck right.
So that's true. So I wouldn't say that I'm never going
to
play a
mirror
match.
You have to sometimes be willing to say, okay, this deck is beating what I'm testing it against. Now, let's just test the mirror for a while. That's a matchup too, and often it's an easier one to gain an edge in because your opponent's...
Never test it.
Yeah,
never
I don't really understand. Testing the mirror is actually one of my favorite things to do because you tend to find out a lot about a deck by playing mirror matches.
So in the end, at the end of the day, with like these thoughts about being different for different sakes, testing mirror matches, what is your edge, Casey, when you play Magic right now? Like, what is the thing that wins you matches of Magic over anything else?
Preparation, I think, is the biggest thing. Just knowing more about every little thing. Knowing how the cards interact, knowing how the decks line up against each other. Preparation, I think, takes me further than most of my opponents. It has resulted in so many match wins over the course of my life.
Michael?
Recently, I felt like I've done a really good job of just being very process-oriented, where... The goal is just to look at the next play and make the slightly better choice, understanding that you can't always win a match of Magic with a decision, but you can lose it a lot more than you'd think.
I like that a lot. A decision that isn't going to win you a match of Magic as much as it's going to lose you one, so making the right decision just gets you further to that the end of that process.
So generally what you're doing is you're just trying to say, okay, what is the best decision I can make right now? And when I do that, it helps me stay grounded in terms of getting tilted because I can look back at each decision point I had and try to evaluate those. I think it also helps me not get entitled. It helps success feel like kind of a constant, ongoing effort that is really about making correct decisions one time and then the next time and then the time after that. And when you lose, you find more often than not, you messed up pretty bad somewhere, and that to me has taken a lot of the feelings of being unlucky and a lot of the tilt out of my game. And I think in general people are too quick to blame luck and variance for losses, and I think in general it doesn't help you get better when that's your first instinct every time you lose.
Especially if it's your first instinct, it's just wrong.
Yeah, it's like there are times where bad things happen to good people, right? That's Magic.
Sure. But when you lose a match where you can go back and say, I think I made right decisions at basically every point and I just wasn't as lucky as my opponent.
You can go back and say that you made the right decisions at every point in a match of Magic, then you're going to be on the Pro Tour already, so you're wrong.
Well, all I'm saying is if you think your decisions were mostly good, and you lost mostly due to variance, it's no longer something to be tilted about. It's actually, I played just a really good match of Magic. It just didn't quite come together for me.
Feel good about.
So you can take positive things even from negative overall.
We talked about this a long time ago on the podcast. It was a point we drove home for, I think, a few episodes. It might have been like episode in the 80s all the way to episode 100 and something, where we talked about if you were making the correct play every single line of every single match you played, you would already be a Platinum Pro. And if you're not, then you're not doing that, and you need to go back and reflect.
Right, you're in denial.
Yeah, you are not in the stage of Magic where you're going to be doing your best. And this podcast sometimes gets hate for saying things like that, but like, let's be honest with yourself.
Like,
are you serious? You think that you're playing every single turn of a game correctly all the time and losing, and you're not a Platinum Pro? Like, you're insane. Right. You're wrong.
You would be winning way more than you're losing in like, that.
That's just stupid. You are in denial if you don't believe that.
Yeah. I think that over my last like 4 or 5 tournaments, I've had maybe 1 or 2 matches that I lost because totally outside of my control circumstances. I think every single other loss, I have at least 1 or 2 things I can point to that may have turned a game around in my favor.
I lost a match today where I mulliganed to 5, and instead of saying I lost because I mulliganed to 5, I said because I lost because I didn't mulligan to 4.
Right. Or
sure, and maybe you made a wrong pick in
Maybe I would have, but I should have mulliganed to 4.
Right. This took me a really long time to figure out, but I used to have a really big issue with keeping bad hands in ostensibly good matchups.
I know this about you. This was like your first week on the podcast, you admitted this.
Yeah, but just when you start thinking about like, oh, this is a good matchup, you start, rather than just, okay, what is my best play in this situation, you're basically What you're really doing is, in your mind, you are entitling yourself to winning. And you are never entitled to a win. You have to earn it turn by turn. You have to slowly grind out that edge over your opponent.
I think the edge, you have to grind out that edge. You have to those small percentage wins we were talking about earlier, Mike, right? It's every you've kind of separated this a lot. It's a grind. You have to do it again and again every turn. And it's small percentage points that give you that edge. And that's why it's an edge, right?
Right.
The edge of a sword is not, or a knife is not very big. It's why it's the edge.
It's an edge, not a missile. And right? it's a little different.
It's a small tool. But ultimately, you have to remember that Magic is zero sum. And if you want to beat your opponents, you have to generally like play as well as you can and hope they make a mistake. Because most matches of Magic you win will be your opponent messes up before you do. If we're being totally honest.
So for me, my edge in Magic, it's the opposite of the edge that I thought I had like 5 years ago. And that's slowing down. I think that playing extremely fast Magic to put your opponent on tilt does absolutely nothing. Especially at this point. And I think that slowing down my game and getting away from like this lightning speed play where I'm doing everything very direct and I want to use the word heavy, like you're laying it on heavy to your opponent. And I think that a lot of people equate fast Magic to good Magic, and I don't think that's true. I think that good Magic is good Magic and fast Magic is lazy Magic.
I think that sometimes good Magic players associate good Magic to fast Magic, and like it's because they are sometimes not being introspective about how fast they're playing.
If you're able to make the correct decision quickly, it's likely indicative that you are a good Magic player already.
You have a lot of minutes on that clock.
But I'm with Spencer. I like to try to play, I mean, not slow play, but when I'm thinking that everything is locked up, I was playing.
That's when I slowed down the
Amulet
most.
Titan this weekend, and one of the things I started doing. Every time I thought I was going to win a game,
I would
start announcing every single trigger.
Yeah, I started like, doing that.
Visually indicating exactly how the stack was going to work because I start thinking, okay, this I know is, I can count. The only way I can lose this game
is if you mess up. And that's what I want to talk about because so often players think, I'm going to win this game. I'm going to hurry up so that like I can close it out so they don't have time.
So they can go get a sandwich.
Well, no, or
they can brag to their friends about how they crushed this guy.
Even more than that, this misconception that if they win the match quickly, they won't give their opponent time to win. But like, you're going to win that game on the same turn you were going to win it either way. You don't need to spend
I think it's just excitement more than anything. I get.
I don't think it is. I think that it's literally a thought process. I've heard players say, I needed to play quickly so that they didn't have time to win. It's like, man, that's just not how this works. It's a clock that you're sharing. They can take as much time as they want to try and win that game.
Yeah, I used to think that there were advantages to playing fast. I didn't necessarily play fast out of like trying to put tilt my opponent, but I did
used I to actually think it's that rude.
People would speed up if I speed up to my play or closer to my play in general. I learned after several years of frustrating Magic tournaments where no matter how fast I played, my opponents still were glacial, that it doesn't actually help, and it actually just makes you more upset because you're like, well, I took 15 seconds a turn, and my opponent took a minute a turn.
And as somebody who is frustrated by the way that certain calibers of Magic players do this, I personally have just decided to slow down against them to a glacial speed, to the most glacial speed that is allowed. Because it's not, they don't get to do that. And their goal is to put you on tilt, and I think that I have developed very well in my ability to play Magic. And I think that it does give me an edge in the way that I get to think about my plays. And I think that it's good that you can get to the speed where you can play Magic fast. But I think what it's important is, like, do you need to play Magic fast? Because having the ability to play Magic fast when you need to is important. And that is an edge that you can gain. But also being able to play Magic at a reasonable pace and where you can finish every match on time.
So my thought is, it's nice to have decisions made in your head quickly.
Yes.
Because if it takes you 10 minutes to figure out, you know, okay, what's the line, you can't do that. So I want to be able to make my decisions in my head quickly, review them for a second, and then make sure I say the right words. I mean,
oh man, we know the wrong.
No one wants to lose a game for just accidentally saying.
Why don't you tell the story, Casey? You're pointing at me, which no one can see.
I was just pointing out that he was daggering you more than I was pointing at you.
Go ahead, tell it.
I think you've discussed it not that long ago on the podcast, but basically playing for top 8 of a PTQ, you had the whole thing locked up, then you immediately tried to get into action and said, Xenagos, make a guy. Make mana.
And I thought concede. Of the play. I thought of the play before I even made the play. I was like, all right, so I specifically have to make mana this turn to win. Xenagos, make a guy. And it was like, oh my gosh. And it was the wrong thing. It was the top 8 of the PTQ. And it was tilting. And I think that that's what I'm talking about. Like, it might have been the moment that I decided to slow down.
Because it's not necessary. I mean, that, you know, you don't want to play at such a pace that you're going to be getting warnings and drawing all your matches.
Exactly.
But
you want to play at a reasonable pace. Even if no one's saying not to do that.
Even if you can play fast, you don't get a prize for finishing your round a minute and a half earlier. You know, you have time.
Unfortunately.
Casey, can you create an edge that you didn't have before in Magic? Otherwise, what is this podcast about?
Right. I think that it's something that's always ongoing for sure. You can develop an edge over the course of a game that you didn't have at the beginning of the game just by learning, like,
is the key word.
Where your opponent's weaknesses are. You can find and develop an edge over the course of a match or a game just by being observant. We were saying, oh, my opponent actually doesn't know this. How can I press that to my advantage? And there's a lot of ways that that can come up, where if you are trying to find these opportunities to gain a little bit of match equity or an edge, then yeah, they add up fast. So you're never done finding these.
Yeah, I think that that's where we're going to wrap it up, because I think what's important to note here is Magic, when we say if you're not getting better, you're getting worse, we mean it. And the reason that we mean that, and the reason we won't talk about edges and things like that, is when you think about it, everybody on this podcast, other than Michael Hinderacher, has gotten worse and better throughout doing the podcast. And it happens a lot. You get worse, you get better. And the reason that happens is because you get lazy. You don't execute on the things that give you those small edges, those tiny things that make you better at Magic. And if you don't do it, those little things that Michael talked about, where if you don't do the right thing 100 times, if you do it right 48 times, it's going to cost you. If you do it right 99 times, it's going to cost you. And you have to slow it down. You have to do it. You have to make the correct play and gain that edge. The edge only happens because you're doing it right. So Don't forget, you can check out the clan on MTGO at by messaging me on MTGO at Spencer13Dev. You can also message Quentin at Earthstripe. That's URTHSTYRPE. Did I do that right?
Sounded right.
URTHST.
Is that not what I said?
I don't know.
So it's.
I'm not sure. It's.
I'll just take it from the top. URTHSTRYPE.
Cool. The current Patreon goal is for brews after brewing, or brewing after brews.
Something like that.
But I think it will be updated to getting a streaming computer up and running so that we can do streams. Can't decide if it's going to be a laptop or a desktop. It might be a laptop so that everybody can take it with them and do streams whenever they want. But we definitely want to start streaming. In fact, I did a stream today and got a ton of messages that were like, oh my gosh, that's really cool. Can you guys do that more often? It's like, we used to do it all the time. We need a computer that can do it correctly. Yes, we will make it happen. I'm sure we all play enough Magic Online that we can make it happen for you guys. And we do want to stream for you. But if you want to see that happen, check out patreon.com/ccmtg. Start donating at $1 a month or more. Anything is appreciated. And the podcast will always be free, so don't feel like you have to. We're going to be able to find you, Casey.
You can find me on Facebook at Casey Tuna Bloodworth or on Twitter at CC Bloodthirst. Or I'm playing a little bit of Magic Online recently, so if you see me online, you can add me. Or, I mean, I guess you can add me if you don't see me online and just wait for me to come online at SneakyFish.
Where can people find you? Have you been playing Magic Online?
A little bit.
Good for
you. You know, I still can't, like, win a match of this limited format for some reason, but
yeah,
I'm
I was
going to
say,
practicing.
Speaking of Magic Online, I am a secret Magic Online drafting degenerate. It's a problem.
All right.
Is that why you had to start working part-time at Oasis to subsidize your drafting?
Basically. So you can find me in the Facebook group at Michael Hinderocker. I'm more than happy to respond to any and all deck lists, questions, comments, hashtags, whatever.
And on Twitter?
You can find me on Twitter at MagicMikeMTG.
That wasn't a dagger, by the way. That was just a question.
Spencer just smiled a little while he said that.
You know what? I like it.
How is that a dagger?
He says that Matt Kling and I abused him and Deli did it.
I didn't say abused. I said harassed, which
was the total of one tweet.
It didn't take much.
Some people's harassment threshold is lower than others.
That's what he said to
me. I don't like being yelled at. Yeah. Tweeting me is basically yelling at me. My phone vibrates.
If you
tweet
at me, you're yelling at me.
So tweet kindly.
So
if you
don't tweet at Michael.
Michael is a sensitive soul.
Tweet kindly. Thank you.
What? You tweeted at me. Oh my gosh. I'm like losing it. All right.
Be nice.
You can find me on Twitter at Spencer13H. You can find me on Facebook at Spencer Stephen Howland. You can find the podcast at CCMTG and the podcast on constructivecriticism.com, MTGcast.com, YouTube.com. And what, Casey?
I got nothing.
All right.
Pure MTGO.
Every other week. This, I believe, not this week, but we will do it starting next week.
Okay.
And don't forget to check out the Facebook group. It really is great. We had a lot of people ask to join this week, and it was pretty sweet.
It's exciting. It's fun to get a chance to chat with more of you guys and gals.
And especially the gals. They're great. I love the group. I love how nice we are to each other. I've never seen anyone fight, which is amazing for the internet.
Yeah, I mean, Manny and I take most of our fighting off the group, so...
Yeah, I mean...
Just
all
in
of,
person, right? You guys just like to beat each other up.
Dude, yeah. I mean, we get pretty vicious on Twitter with each other at this point.
Yeah, no, not
as
much recently.
I feel like it's all Manny's fault, but...
Yeah, I mean, especially based on the fact that he's not here to defend himself, I agree.
Think we should. I think we should make cult t-shirts for Manny.
We should specifically not do that.
Why?
Because also...
It goes to his head.
Yeah, I'm sure that you just said that on the podcast, and now people are like, I'll buy
one.
I just
want to buy a t-shirt with Manny Meraz's face on it.
Don't we?
Nothing
all,
else.
But...
It would be so funny.
Can it say something like hurtful about him?
No, it just says nothing. It's just a picture of his face.
Isn't there Josh McClane shirts like that?
Probably.
I think
funny.
So. I think they're playmats.
Are they playmats?
That's even
yeah,
better.
Because he was making fun of the Brian Kibler playmat. So Alexander Hain started selling Josh McClane playmats.
That's great.
All right, let's look. I'm sure this is a thing we can see. Apparently it's not.
Yeah, maybe it was just an idea that was workshopped.
No, I'm pretty sure that I've seen the Josh McClane playmat.
It's probably just that no one uploaded it to a website with the title Josh McClane
playmat. I'm friends with Alexander Haine. I've seen the playmat.
Yeah, maybe he has the only one.
Oh, that's great.
That's just as good.
Oh my gosh, you should just make a playmat with Manny's face on it.
This is mostly for... Yeah, I'm going to play with it every day.
Yeah. And I think that that's a good way to gain an edge, too. I feel like if you have a playmat with your opponent's face on it...
Just for reference, if you play at a local game store a lot, you should get a playmat with all of your opponent's faces on it. So you can rotate it between rounds, right? You get like 8 different playmats.
Right. That's gaining a huge edge.
If that's not intimidation, I don't know what is.
Hashtag would that be good is next. Hashtag would that be good is our Twitter outreach program, where you can tweet anything you want. And we only have one that's not me this week. What? That's the least
you've
had.
Tweet a lot.
I mean, all of these are from... Not today, but my first one is actually really good, so I actually want to talk about it. But the one from the Matt says, Mario should start use a Kickstarter or some other crowdfunding to get the third Unset made. Hashtag, quote, unauthorized. That sounds fantastic, actually.
So I'm against this idea because Kickstarter is not for billion-dollar companies to... fund their ideas, their R&D ideas. If the idea is good enough, they should make it. If it's going to sell, if it's not going to sell,
it's only great because it's called unauthorized.
I mean, that is a sweet name.
Sure.
Especially if you have to fund it through Kickstarter.
Yeah, that's what makes it great. That's what makes
But he should have to print it in his basement so he doesn't offend Casey.
Right. Otherwise, if they actually print it through
Wizards... And then
Wizards,
you should get sued. That would be even...
Right, that's what would make it unauthorized. If it's truly unauthorized and he loses his job...
Then he can have a Kickstarter to pay for his legal defense.
Right.
Oh, man, it'll be great.
I would donate to that, but just as far as a giant company using Kickstarter just to avoid paying for something...
He's not telling the company to do it. He's telling Mark Rosewater to do it.
He is totally he's basically just the mouth that they speak through.
So it's him and Haleen Bergeau. They're the entire company?
Trick Jarrett, too. Yeah.
Okay.
Those three.
I think Wizards Magic should let us link our Magic Online accounts to our DCI so we can get Planeswalker points on MTGO for buys. Hashtag, would that be good?
I think I'm over Planeswalker points. I think they should abolish the program.
I was going to say, given that I'm 150 short of 2 buys for next year, I mean, definitely. They should definitely do
I actually
that.
Just don't know why this isn't a function. If we're going to, if we're going to be rewarded for playing Magic... in order to get buys for Grand Prix, I don't know why we don't get rewarded for all the Magic we play.
I think that it's fine for them to be separate. Magic Online has separate advantages, like the Mox. I don't know that it needs to have, Planeswalker points in addition.
I would appreciate it for purely selfish reasons, so I don't think my opinion
counts. I think my reasons are selfish, but I don't know that they don't make sense.
That could well be true. I mean, I understand. If you can win a Pro Tour invite through Moto, it seems odd that you can't win Planeswalker points through Moto. At least for some events.
Yeah. I mean, maybe they only do it for, PPTQs.
And PTQs or something.
And PTQs, sure. Or something.
Maybe the problem is, it's tough to not allow people to, work together to earn somebody Planeswalker points, right? If I say, okay, hey, Spencer, will you draft, do these PPTQs on my account?
I assume that is the rationale.
Planeswalker points. You have to be physically there and present in general to be able to use your Planeswalker points.
I don't know that that's true because I'm pretty sure people qualified for the Pro Tour off Planeswalker points without actually doing events.
Right, and they immediately abolished that system. So thank you. I agree completely. It was found to be a deeply flawed system, and they abolished it.
Thank you, everybody, for listening this week. Don't forget to support the podcast via Patreon. Check out the YouTube channel. Great content on there. And congratulations, Mike, on cashing your first GP, bud.
Oh, thanks. I really appreciate that.
Yeah, and go home and go to bed.
That's the plan.
All right.
As long as I don't fall asleep while I'm driving.
Please don't.
And
I'll
if you
pull
do...
over first.
In Memoriam, Michael Hendrocker, 1990-ish to 2016.
It's
90. I think he's a
91.
Few years younger than us.
It's 91, but, you know.
90-ish, like I said.
Yeah.
All right.
you can come to my funeral and say that.
If Michael dies before this podcast is posted, you might not hear this podcast for a while. But
or at least not this part. My God.
Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week.